The Frequency 49 show is brought to you by the Niner Empire GB.
Welcome to the Frequency 49 show. I'm your host, Simon Holdsworth, and joining me this week are Deepak Gohil and Michael Wande. Good evening, guys.
Yeah, good evening, Si. Good evening, Michael.
Hello, you two, and hello from Germany.
So, Pride Time Sunday Night Football was the setting this week as the undefeated 49ers took on their fierce rivals, the dead-ass Cowboys at Levi Stadium. This was touted as a standout game and a yardstick to see where both teams really were in terms of their Super Bowl chances this year. We certainly found out as the Niners dominated in every facet of the game, shredding the much-vaunted Cowboys' defense at will and forcing four turnovers from their offense to run out comfortable 42-10 winners in a very lopsided game. Deepak, I'll start with you because I know how much you love them boys.
You know what? I really don't know where to start. And it was one of them where I never thought that we would lose this game. I thought it might be one of those weird ones, but we'd get over it. But I wasn't expecting this. I really wasn't. And we kind of knew it was going to happen from the moment we scored off that double flea flicker. You know, I was like, oh, well, this is good.
It was some play, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, apparently Detroit ran that play earlier on in the day.
They did.
Yeah. But do you know what? I'll tell you this, Si. I've been a Niner fan for a very, very long time. And this is in my top five all-time wins. In fact, I'd say it's second only to the NFC Championship game where we went to the Super Bowl in 95 where we beat the Cowboys at Candlestick. Man, it's this one for me. It runs deep for me, this rivalry, and I take it very personally. I've got a lot of friends who are Cowboys fans. They've been taking stuff off me the week before and for the 10 years after.
My brother's a Cowboys fan, so he's been getting it this week as well. Michael, how did you see the game, buddy?
Yeah, I watched it with some buddies at Discord. We shared a stream because it's always nerve-wracking when one is about 2 or 3 minutes before the others. So we synchronized it by watching it together. And yeah, it was awesome. I didn't expect it as well, but the ass whooping we gave them. Is it just me or is it every game we faced Micah Parsons and the Cowboys? The Cowboys were barking before the game and didn't brought it when the game started. Is it just me or is it really happening?
Well, they do a lot of jarring, don't they? The Cowboys, and you know this year was no change to that. I know a lot of them were coming out saying we're going to get revenge for the playoff game last year, and the 49ers haven't played anybody yet, and they're going to see what hit them, and you know, looking at the stats, I mean, Purdy 17 of 24, 252 yards, 4 touchdowns. 0 interceptions. That's just what he does now. It's expected now, isn't it?
Yeah. And also the media always play this game up. I mean, I think some of the post-game comments were hilarious, but pre-game, it's as if the media preempted this win by saying, yeah, but it is Dallas, but would San Francisco have still played anyone decent? While at the same time talking about how powerful Dallas's pass rush was going to be and how it's going to knock Brock Purdy into the next universe, you know. None of those things happened. None of them did.
No, they didn't. And if anything, you know, the Cowboys, for the most part, kept our run game in check. You know, Mason was our leading rusher with 69 yards off 10 carries and that touchdown, which, you know, I absolutely loved his celebration when he went in the end zone. You know, he's deserved a big game touchdown, Jordan Mason. But to keep CMC down to 51 yards off 19 carries is pretty good run defense. And it just goes to show that Shanahan, you know, he can put a playbook together against any defense, because the Dallas defense, you know, coming into the game, were, let's say, they were pretty highly fancied, and we absolutely shredded them. And if CMC doesn't get you, Kittle gets you. If Kittle don't get you, Ayuk gets you. There's always somebody open.
But that's the dangerous mix you've got there, right, Simon, is when you've got multiple ways, and when I say ways, I mean strategic plays that Shanny can dial up to beat you, combined with multiple personnel who are probably top five in their position at any given time in this league. When you've got that level of execution by competent players, you can't defend it. There's nothing you can do about it. Nothing.
You can't. And, you know, everyone has been, you know, Shanahan's play calling has been, you know, lauded for years. We've now got a captain of the ship who can read those progressions. I mean, Brock Purdy's arm isn't the strongest. We've touched on that before. But the way he reads the game, the way he sets defenders off with his eyes, the way he goes through the progressions, he makes the right decision over and over and over again. And it completely belies his length of term in the NFL. You know, he's a cerebral quarterback. But not only that, he's ranked number one in the NFL with a completion percentage of 71% of targets of 10-plus yards.
Just before we put Michael in, there's something I want to say about that streak of Brock Purdy's. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not mistaken, it started against Miami, and we were losing at the time.
We were.
We were losing at the time that it came on. And I do remember all of us in the game day thread thinking, well, we've had it now. You know, that's it. We've had it now. We were not expecting the win. To expect that a player who's in, he's been mentioned in NFL MVP conversations now, for him to go from that to this, it's just phenomenal. And he gets better with every game. And I think Michael needs to come in here.
Yeah, I mean, I said it to some buddies here. It wasn't the star-studded team that won the game for us this time. It was Brock. Brock won the game. I mean, look, you already said, named CMC, only 57 yards or so. Ayuk, only 4 receptions. Debo, only 3 receptions. Kittle only had 3 receptions, and all 3 were touchdowns. I mean, Brock won the game for us this time, and that's what a lot of his critics say, that, yeah, it's so easy for him. He has a star-studded team, and he doesn't need to do what, for example, Mahomes has to do to win the game for the team. He did exactly that, and they still say he isn't a real quarterback, and that's so funny.
It is really funny, and, you know, some of the passes that he completed, there's one where he hit, I think it was Debo Samuel on a crossing route, and he threw the ball. The way he throws his receivers open and hits them in stride is, he threw the ball, it went looped over Van Der Esch, I think it was, the Dallas linebacker, and the viewpoint, when the camera's behind him, Samuel isn't even in the camera shot, and he arrives on the ball in stride. And those are the passes that the previous incumbent of the QB jersey at the 49ers just wasn't making and couldn't make, didn't have the ability to do it. And there was a certain quarterback on the Dallas sideline on the Sunday who wouldn't have been able to make those throws either.
Well, do you remember, I don't know if you heard this, George Kittle, and he was complimenting Brock Purdy's throws, and in particular their accuracy. And what he actually said was, he goes, I can go to sleep after that game not hurting.
Yeah.
And I wonder if he was having a go at Jimmy Garoppolo, because he had to contort and twist and adjust, all the players did, to catch or try and make a play out of some of those throws, you know. But for him to come out and say, yeah, I can just go to sleep easy now, I thought that was a bit telling, personally.
I agree entirely. And there's more to it than that as well, isn't there, Deepak? If you're a QB and you're hitting your receivers in stride, they're facing the way that they're going. They can brace for contact if there is any, but they can also get their head up the field to make more advantage of the yards after the catch. Whereas if they're looking backwards, like you say, contorting their body, they can't brace for contact. They have no idea who's coming from where. And it's just not as efficient. It's nowhere near as efficient, and people get injured, as you say. But yeah, I think it was perhaps a thinly veiled swipe at Jimmy G. What do you think, Michael?
I think he's gone for a schnitzel.
No, I just didn't hit the unmute button. I mean, yeah, definitely. And I mean, we always talk about the Hydra we have with Kittle, Debo, Ayuk, and CMC, but we have a pretty good secondary specialist team. I mean, if I remember, one of the best passes I saw in that game was to Juwan Jennings, and the pretty good run by Jordan Mason. I mean, that team, except for the O-line, that team is bloody dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, the offense is absolutely humming at the moment, isn't it? It really, really is. I think it's probably the best offense that we've had since 94, Deepak, probably, do you think?
I mean, the number of times I used to say we don't have a marquee receiver, we don't have a marquee anything. Now we've got all pros in every single skill position.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It just came, and I sometimes wonder who the missing piece was. And a lot of people say it's CMC. I personally think the things that stopped us from going to the Super Bowl when we lost to the Rams and actually beating Baltimore was quarterback. I think it was quarterback play that eventually put an end to our aspirations. You know,
we all know if Purdy wouldn't have injured against the Rams. That against the Eagles, that would be a totally different game. So, I mean, he's basically 10-0, and it's not 10-1 like everyone says, or 11-1, because he didn't lose that game; he just got injured.
Absolutely, and guys, obviously, we it would be remiss of us not to mention the defense.
Wow.
You know, they absolutely hounded Dak Prescott. I mean, Dak Prescott throws interceptions in his sleep, but they forced four turnovers, three interceptions, and the forced fumble. But I know we tend to give him a shout out every week. But if he's not in Defensive Player of the Year recognition, he bloody well should be. And that's Fred Warner. What a guy! What a leader! He's all over the field. 8 tackles, a sack, a forced fumble, and an interception on the night. The complete linebacker, guys.
Well,
And NFC Defensive Player of the Week.
Yes, NFC Defensive Player of the Week as well.
But where do you start with the defense? It's like the offense. We can reel off the names. We can reel off CMC, Brendan Ayuk, Debo Samuel, all those guys. It's the same with the D. We can start reeling off players that are all pro. Dre Greenlaw was phenomenal. I mean, he was good. He was physical. He was tough. He wasn't playing for a highlight reel. Hargreaves was good, getting in the faces of the Dallas offensive line. I tell you what, our D was lights out. They had nothing, no answer to it whatsoever. And I think that was the difference that made the difference. Our D line just ran rampant over them. It just did what it wanted to do.
Yeah. And I heard after the game, Doug threw away his helmet in disgust, and it was intercepted.
I actually saw him do that. He did throw it away, didn't he? He was absolutely devastated.
People in the media are blaming Dak Prescott for this loss. I'm like, how can you possibly blame him for this? It was wholesale annihilation. This was murder on a industrial scale. You can't say it was because of Dak Prescott. I mean, the Cowboys have got their problems, and long may they continue, but I think it's very disingenuous to say Dak Prescott was crap, that's why the Cowboys lost. That's not why they lost, and I think they know it.
Dak is basically their Jimmy G. He is good enough to be above almost half the quarterbacks in the league. He has some pretty good games, like Jimmy had. But when push comes to shove, he always has his blackouts. He's basically their Jimmy G. But I don't blame it on him. Like our Super Bowl against the Chiefs, where everyone blamed it on Jimmy, it was also the defense that lost the game. I mean, they told everyone that is the strongest defense in the NFL before the game, and we put 42 points on them, and that's on the defense. That's not on Dak Prescott.
But I mean, you know, I don't think I've seen a team, and this is a question I think we need to discuss. So have we peaked too soon, or are we still finding our way? Because teams after week five are still finding their way somewhat, you know, and then they start to peak at around week nine, week 10, once they've got all their little moving parts oiled and they're working as a well-oiled machine. Have we peaked too soon, or are we the most ferocious phenomena the NFL's seen since the 1985 Chicago Bears, you know?
I think that's a great question, Dee. I think, for me, I think we're getting better every week. That's the crazy thing, is that you kind of go, where is the ceiling for this team? We are so stacked on both sides of the ball, as we've mentioned. Where is that ceiling? You know, at what point do we kind of go, they'll never play better than that? Because you think that from last week, and then they go and perform better, and then they go and perform better. And, you know, the one thing that does stand out on some of the videos that I watch on YouTube and things like that is they're constantly striving to be better. There is a great mantra and a great work ethic within this team. You know, they're not just, you know, all style. There's a lot of substance there. They're a punch you in the mouth and look good doing it kind of team.
Sorry, Michael, go ahead.
I think at the moment we're just the most complete team in the league. I mean, you have teams like, for example, our next opponent, Cleveland, who have a pretty good defense, but the offense is really shit. And then you have teams where you have a really good offense, but the defense is. And we're the most complete team. We're functioning on all cylinders. Offense, 30 points per game, now more. Defense doesn't allow more than an average 13 points per game. And then you have a special team, and Mitch Wisnowski is getting better each week. I mean, so many punts he put this season into between the 10 and the goal line. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and we don't even know what Jake Moody is capable of yet, because we don't kick field goals anymore. We score touchdowns.
And speaking of which, Dallas didn't even enter our red zone.
I know.
Not get in.
What a stat. What an absolutely brilliant stat. But I'm going to applaud Michael for his timing, because that does lead us on to the game next week against Cleveland. We open as 5.5-point favourites against a very lopsided Browns team, as Michael alluded to. They are the NFL's number one ranked defence, but the 31st ranked offence. So as Michael rightly said, you know, they're good on D, but they ain't so good on offence. So how do we see it going? Is it the irresistible force against the immovable object, or do we? I can't see anything other than a Niners win.
Well, who have their D been tested against? You know, the AFC North is actually a really, really gnarly division, because every game's a huge rivalry game. Tough games that they play in that division. Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Cincinnati. I don't think any of them, apart from the Ravens, have lived up to being as advertised, if you see what I mean.
And even the Ravens lost to the Steelers.
Yeah, but I don't think Cleveland has faced a team that remotely has so many different weapons that are so deadly and effective in one game. So many different ways of being beat is something they haven't come across. And it would be interesting to see our offense go against their D. But on the deep side, I can't see us losing it. That's not to say it's going to be a cakewalk. I don't think there is such thing as an easy game in this league. There really isn't, apart from Dallas. Anyway, but this will be a tough game. It will be another one that we've earned. But I think it makes a benchmark as well, because automatically the comparisons after beating Dallas are they good enough to beat Philadelphia? Are they good enough to beat an NFC, legit NFC competitors? Who's left after Dallas? It's Philly. It's Philly, Dallas, and us. There's no one else, really. But Detroit are probably knocking on the door. In fact, I would even put Detroit ahead of Dallas, maybe. But in the AFC, we've still got to leave a footprint on there. And going back to week one, Pittsburgh was not as easy as we think it is. I think that team still got something in it.
Not many teams beat the Ravens, and they beat the Ravens.
Yeah, you know, so I think this is a great opportunity to gauge how we are against a tough, tough AFC team, you know.
Well, the last time, this is probably a good way of showing how far we've come, because the last time the teams met at Cleveland Browns Stadium, the Browns picked up a 24-10 win, and that was in December 2015. Any guesses who the Browns quarterback was that day?
Hoyer.
No.
Johnny
Manziel. Johnny Football.
Johnny Manziel. Okay.
Got beat by Johnny Manziel. That shows you how far we've come since 2015.
Yeah, but I heard the masseuse nightmare won't play, so we are facing their backup quarterback.
It's likely that he's out, but I don't think he's officially been ruled out as yet. Deshaun Watson, yeah. But their offense hasn't been good with him in it, never mind without him. But yeah, I don't think he's been officially ruled out.
But they're not really a team that's going to push our defense, especially if their offense is so poor. But I'll tell you what would be interesting to see, and I can see this coming, is a defensive score. I'm talking about a safety over a pick six or a scoop and pick. I'm talking safety. I think we've come danger close to getting a couple of those, and I can see it happening.
We have, and that's a direct result of what Michael was talking about with Mitch Wisnowski, and the odd occasions that we punt. If you can, tie a team down inside their own 5-yard line, then with our defensive line, then you're right, Deepak. It's very much a possibility. I might have a little wager on that this week.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to have a wager on. I'm going to have a little punt on us going 10-0.
Wow, okay.
I'm going to have a go at that. I'm not a gambling man. And I'm not saying it's a sure thing. But I am saying it's a likely thing.
No, very much so. Very much so. Well, the last time we started a season 6-0 was 2019.
That's Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean we ended up 8-0 and then lost our ninth game. So
did we not go 10-0 that season?
No, we were 8-1. Didn't we lose a silly game against Atlanta?
Yeah, we were 15-2 now. So 13-3 that year, 2019.
Yeah. 13-3. So the last time we played the Cleveland Browns, we
2019.
We won 31-3.
Yeah,
that was at Levi.
That was the Bosa flag game when Bosa.
It was the Bosa flag game. Yeah, it was Baker Mayfield.
Yeah. Baker Mayfield, and he will see Baker Mayfield this season again on 19th of November.
Tampa Bay.
Tampa Bay, yeah.
Of course. Speaking of Nick Bosa, how do we feel he's been playing? I feel like he hasn't necessarily hit the stat lines, but he's been every bit as good as he has been for the previous few seasons. Because he was late into camp, wasn't he? Obviously, with the holdout for the contract. But how do you guys see him playing?
I think he still is there. What people always don't see is the tackle and the guard always double-team him, or tackle on the tight end, They always double team him, but he opens lanes for Armstead or for Hargraves or for Kinlaw, and that's even as important. And the problem, I think, is the other defensive end. Neither Drake Jackson nor Farrell are really that dangerous that they can't double Nick Bosa. So I hope Randy Gregory will be a factor there.
Well, that was an interesting pickup, wasn't it? Prior to the Cowboys game, Randy Gregory. I mean, he's got a tremendous upside if we can get him playing again. But there was little or no financial implications, was there? I think Denver are still picking up the vast majority of his salary, aren't they?
But going back to what you said about Nick Bosa, you know, bearing in mind he's had a very high contract negotiation, I agree with Michael. I still think he is as advertised. And this guy's name we haven't mentioned. People have been wondering, well, he's a bit quiet. He's been quiet. What's he been doing? He's scored 3 touchdowns. He got a hat trick. Okay. That's him catching the ball. But yeah. George Kittle has been doing so many other things that help us win. But of course, we notice catches and we notice big plays and we notice touchdowns. But this guy has been blocking and blocking and blocking. He got a chance to make a couple of plays and he took them. You know, he took them well. And I think this is the thing with these players, these big marquee players whose names we mentioned, when they're not making big plays, they're contributing to help somebody else make those big plays. And this is the reason I think we are so dangerous, is that they're not asleep on the job. It's because they're wide awake and active on the job that we can be so effective in hurting in so many different levels and different ways. I think, for me, I'm torn between Kittle and Warner as MVP.
So far this season?
Yeah.
Not Brock?
No. For MVP, I would say CMC, actually.
So far.
Yeah, so far it would be CMC. But Brock is in the conversation, of course. Warner, lights out, he's the best defensive player in the NFL. Bar none, end of story. There's no discussion around that.
I think CMC will become Offensive Player of the Year, and because they never do anything else than a quarterback on that position since the 90s, and it basically became not most valuable player, but most valuable quarterback. And
yeah,
that's why I think a quarterback will win it. And if you only take the quarterbacks, Purdy is in the running, but the season is still long. And if you would be fair, it would be definitely a CMC. And Fred Warner should be in the running for Defensive Player of the Year, and not, for example, Micah. I am hidden away in important games, passing.
Well, it's interesting because we face another Defensive Player of the Year potential candidate this year in Myles Garrett, and you know that Cleveland front four is no joke. And but I look at it this way: we've mentioned the 49ers offensive line quite a few times this year and how we felt it was perhaps a little bit lopsided. But in every game that we've played so far, each team has had an elite pass rusher, from TJ Watt to Aaron Donald to Micah Parsons and you know, so on and so forth. I don't see Myles Garrett being any different to those guys and being manhandled, do you?
No, I do not, because Myles Garrett doesn't have the supporting cast that we do.
Mm.
He can't do it by himself. You know,
he's got, is it 6 or 7 sacks on the year? But again, they've not really played anybody, I suppose. But they, you know, he's playing probably the best football of his career, and he's a talented guy. But again, like I say, I just don't see how he is going to be any different from Micah Parsons. Apart from he's a little bit quieter than Micah Parsons.
So applied psychology to the game, Simon.
Yeah.
We've got a big target painted on our backs, and what better game for someone who's a defensive stud to make a name for himself than to go roughshod over this 49er offense that everyone's cooing about, you know?
Yeah.
That's a good motivator for those sorts of players, especially for a defense, to say that we contained a team that was this powerful. And then the questions become, well, are they that powerful after all if little Cleveland can beat them? You know, and I think this is why, A, there are no easy games in the NFL, but B, you've got to treat each game as a playoff game. You know, you really have to.
You do. And Cleveland are coming off a bye week as well. I mean, you could almost argue that our starters are coming off a bye week, but because they were rested for the fourth quarter on Sunday. So,
but a bye week is not always a positive thing.
No, there's
so many first picks or first seeds dropped out in the championship game because they had a bye week or in the divisional round.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get a prediction from you guys then. How do we see it going? Michael, I'll let you go first.
Niners win by 10.
By 10. Deepak?
Yeah, I think two scores. So it could be 14, it could be 10, or it could be 4.
Yeah, I think it'd probably be around 14. I think something like 31. Mind you, I still see us scoring 30 points, and I don't see us conceding more than 14. So,
well, yeah, exactly. Now, I think that would have been a more challenging question, Si, is can the offense score 30 on Cleveland's defense, which you did sort of ask in a roundabout way.
Yeah, yeah. I see us scoring 30. I really do.
Because if we're scoring 30 points, we're not going to lose.
No.
Not with that defense. If we're scoring 30, we ain't losing. Understood.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so just the pick six to catch up on. This week, Paul Marsh, James Waters, John Newell, Lorraine Burrows, Andy Watson, and Kieran William all scored 5 points, so well done. Special mention to Vincent Evans, who scored minus 1 point, which is some achievement, which means the overall standings, Andrew Eifold is leading on 37 points. Vincent Evans, despite going backwards, is second with 35, and Lisa J. Watson third on 33. In terms of the admin, we have the weekly results. Paul Marsh, as we've mentioned, at 5. Myself and Jason Argo with 3. A few on 2, but James Little and Statman Mark got a big fat 0. Overall, James, despite the big fat 0, and Paul Mack, Paul McDonald, 26 points, Paul Marsh, 25, and Deepak, your third on 24. I think it's that one. The admin one will probably be competitive right up until the end of the season because we're all as bad as each other, I think. Unless anybody's got anything else to add,
special shout out to Mark. It's a lot of fun. A lot of people enjoy it. You know, and, it's not easy for him to knock that together and deliver something that's so engaging that so many people enjoy. So I just want to give my little shout out for that.
Absolutely. And I would certainly echo that. And I know that the rest of the admin team would as well. Keep up the good work, Matt. We love the job you're doing. But if that's it, guys, I will say goodbye on your behalf. So for Deepak Gohill and Michael Wandy, I've been your host, Simon Holdsworth. Go Niners.
Bye.
Good show, gents.
Yep.